This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back, folks. We always have the pleasure of visiting with Dr. Joe Cantor, the state health officer for the state of Louisiana, as it relates to this week's most recent coronavirus update. Doc, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Noel. Thank you. It's nice to be back with you.
Thank you, sir. Doc, we continue to see hotspots around the country. What are we experiencing here?
Well, I wouldn't call Louisiana a hotspot, but we have, over the past now 1 to 2 weeks, experienced very modest, mild increases in cases. So the number of people diagnosed with COVID has gone up. Again, not surge levels, just very mild increases. It fits in with what's happening nationally, where cases have gone up somewhere around 20-25% last week. We're seeing this in all 9 regions. Now, in the bigger picture, what we care more about right now is disease burden or clinical acuity, meaning people that are getting COVID these days, are they getting as sick as people did in months past? And the answer right now continues to be no, and we're thankful for that. Hospitalizations remain low. We have 62 patients with COVID hospitalized in the state. That's fluctuated up and down a little bit the past couple of weeks, but it's still a very, very low number for us. Of those 62, only 5 of them are on ventilators. That number remains very low. So when we look at disease burden, we're not seeing anything close to the type of disease burden we saw in earlier parts of the pandemic. So that's all encouraging. We're going to watch what happens very closely over the next couple of weeks, but if this trend continues, if we see modest increases in cases without a corresponding increase in severe disease, I think that's something that we can weather decently well.
And what we're finding is that you and I have talked about this before. When we look at the approach taken in China of the failure to distribute vaccines that actually work, as opposed to what we've done here, when you look at the data from over there, you recognize that they're having a completely different experience with disease burden, right?
Yeah, night and day. They have a largely naive and vulnerable population. They have a cruddy vaccine, as you say, and they've done a poor job of distributing it to people on top of that. And, you know, they've been pursuing this true COVID zero strategy since their early, you know, since the days of Wuhan, where they've employed very aggressive lockdowns to really prevent any COVID from coming in. And while they've been successful at preventing a lot of COVID coming in, you can't keep that strategy up forever unless you want to become an island, and that's not possible. So of course, at some point, COVID gets in, as it is right now, and it's getting in all at once on a population that largely has no protection, you know, not good protection from a good vaccine and not a lot of protections from prior infection. And so they're getting this giant bolus of cases all at once. You know, we think about the earlier days here and, you know, when we talked a lot about bending the curve in those early few weeks. You know, bending the curve never really meant that the people that would have gotten infected early would never get infected. They probably will, but you spread it out over some time so you don't overwhelm your hospitals and cause a giant disaster where you can't get people care. I'm worried that's what China is in for. The people of China seem vocal now that they're not going to accept continued aggressive lockdowns, as I certainly wouldn't. But they're going to have a lot of cases and a lot of clinical acuity in a very vulnerable and naive population.
Well, they actually took the opposite approach, right? I mean, we vaccinated our elderly because they were the most likely to have developed comorbidities. You just happen to do so with age in a lot of cases and overwhelm the healthcare delivery system. They, on the other hand, they didn't vaccinate anyone over 60. They vaccinated the younger, healthy folks in the hopes of, I guess, keeping China as a very productive nation. And it's really come back to bite them in the proverbial derriere now.
Yeah, I mean, particularly with a low-quality vaccine, too. And as we've seen here, even with a high-quality vaccine, you know, Omicron, you do get these breakthrough infections. They tend to be very mild when you're vaccinated. But you can still spread it to someone else, and that's what they're seeing right now. You know, they, after the initial surge in Wuhan, you know, they kept a very tight grip on entry into China and really tried to limit any type of importation of the virus, which can be an effective immediate short-term strategy, but as we're seeing now has serious long-term consequences. What happened here, you know, both in Louisiana and in the U.S., is restrictions were gradually and methodically lifted, rolled back, as the hospitals could take the volume, so that we never really overrun anything. China never even tried to do that, and now they're having to deal with, as you point out, a largely vulnerable population, particularly vulnerable in the older age groups that are unvaccinated, even with their lousy vaccine, and are going to get very, very sick. It's all going to happen at once. Omicron is more transmissible than the prior variant. They're in for a big trouble, and it's sad that they're having to go through this 2.5 years after they dealt with the Wuhan crisis.
There's also another study out in an article, and I'm sure you read it, talking about how COVID is becoming more and more like the flu in subtle ways. A study out of Hong Kong in 2020 revealed that 80% of new infections were caused by just 10 to 20% of cases, often these super spreader events that you and I have talked about ad nauseum over the last couple of years. What they're finding about Omicron, though, now in a study in Norway and here in the United States, is that it spread much more easily, but it wasn't necessarily super spreader events within households, unlike Delta. In Delta, we heard all of these cases of people being infected, living with 6, 7, 8 kids, their spouse. Happened to us. My spouse had it. I never got it. They're finding more and more that Omicron's kind of acting a little different, where it's in more of these settings that are not, you know, large groups of people.
Yeah, it is strange. And, you know, to be fair, we're still seeing a fair amount of super spreader events. I think the difference now is we're just not doing the type of intensive contact tracing that we were in earlier parts of the pandemic, because it doesn't provide the bang for the buck anymore. So I think we're not learning about a lot of super spreader events, but there are still some anecdotes out there. So I think the possibility for that is still there. You know, it's even harder with one of the differences between COVID and the flu remains that we see a lot more asymptomatic transmission with COVID than we believe we do with the flu. But as you point out, there's still a lot of similarities. And these stories about, one partner or spouse being infected and the other family members not, despite living in the same household, they're out there. I've heard them, too. And we don't have a good reason. That is strange. We haven't, you know, whether there's some susceptibility issue for certain people, that's still a strange phenomenon in some people, not always. You know, I think the normal course is that it spreads easily in the household environment and most people get it, but you still see these exceptions. You know, to the larger point, I do think we're moving to a place where even if the viruses are not similar, COVID and the flu, I think our management of it is going to be much more similar. You know, we have oral medicines now for COVID, Paxlovid and molnupiravir, much like we do for the flu, with Tamiflu. It's becoming a much more common practice now. Risk for severe disease, that their doctor can just call in a prescription for Paxlovid, much like you can for Tamiflu. I've done that for my patients a few times this past week as cases have gone up a little bit. That's a tool we didn't have earlier. So I think the similarities are going to grow. I don't know if COVID is going to become seasonal like the flu is. It's not really been seasonal yet because we've had spikes in all four seasons down here over the past 2 years, but maybe it will. But how we manage it, how we deal with it, how we treat it and keep it at bay without allowing it to really disrupt lives the way that we have learned to do so with the flu, I think that comparison is very apt.
You brought up Paxlovid. There's also a recent article that, and I thought that this was to kind of prevent you from getting more sick. Is that the role of
it is. It is. The goal of Paxlovid is for someone who has COVID, has mild symptoms, and they're at home, they're not in the hospital, but because of their risk profile, their age or their conditions, they're at risk for getting significantly sicker. The goal of Paxlovid and molnupiravir is to treat them and prevent progression to more severe disease. It doesn't wipe out the virus, but it is intended to keep it a little bit at bay and keep those mild symptoms mild in the high-risk patients.
Recent article was released where Pfizer, I guess, had some hope that it would protect people from getting the infection, and as a result of a study, it's revealed that it does not.
Yeah, it didn't work out. They had some hope that they could give it prophylactically. And there was some analogies for this. The HIV treatment world is one of them. It took a lot of years, but we finally are at a point where we understand that certain HIV medicines, if given ahead of time, before someone gets exposed, will prevent that transmission. It's called PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, and it's offered to patients who are high risk for transmission, a high risk of exposure to HIV. It's become very effective for HIV. That was the hope that Pfizer had with Paxlovid, that they could give this medicine to people who might be at high risk for just being exposed to the virus. Maybe they work at a hospital, maybe they work, somewhere on the front lines or in a place where they meet a lot of people face-to-face, and that they could give it as a prophylactic. It didn't work out. The study didn't show that. That doesn't mean that they're not going to go back and maybe change the dose or try something else. I think they will. This was their first shot at it, but I think eventually we'll have a medicine that does that. There's a similar medicine for COVID called Evusheld. It's one of the monoclonal antibodies, and it's given prophylactically to people who are extremely, extremely high risk and who probably can't either get the vaccine or won't mount a good immune response to the vaccine. So it's being offered to a lot of chemotherapy patients, a lot of organ transplant recipients who are on immunosuppressant drugs, and they get an infusion like any monoclonal antibody right now, and it's intended to protect them for any future exposures. That's working pretty well. I think we're actually underutilizing it. And again, I think these tools help keep this at bay. Every time you give that to someone, you're potentially preventing someone that would be hospitalized or die from COVID.
I think AstraZeneca was reporting reduced rates of infection by 80%, and similar numbers reported with Regeneron as a monoclonal antibody as well.
Yeah, highly effective, and it's, I'll tell you, to be completely frank on this, I think uptake in utilization has been rather slow. And I think there still are a lot of patients that would really benefit from these prophylactic monoclonal antibody infusions, particularly Evusheld, that haven't gotten it yet. Not a lot of patients. I mean, not a big number, but a vulnerable group. People that are on chemotherapy, again, a very immunosuppressed patients. So we have some work to do there because there's very little downside. There's not a lot of side effects with these medicines.
You think it's just part of the overarching vaccine hesitancy mindset?
No, I don't. Not with this. I think it's just for therapies like this, particularly therapies that are given to patients that are medically complex. I mean, the patients that would get Evusheld, the prophylactic monoclonal antibody, these are medically complex patients who are followed by teams and when they're getting chemotherapy. I think uptake with any new treatment modality is a little bit slower because there's so many drug-drug interactions to consider, that the patients are complex. I think it just takes a little bit longer for new therapies to be included or introduced, incorporated, I guess is the right word, into the treatment modality. I'm not sensing a lot of pushback to those medicines like I am for the vaccine. That's a whole different story.
Yeah. All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Dr. Joe Cantor, the state health officer for the state of Louisiana. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Dr. Joe Cantor, State Health Officer for the state of Louisiana. Doc, you and I have talked a lot about long-haul COVID, and it seems as though it presents itself whether or not you've been vaccinated or not, correct?
It does, if possible, too. There's data coming out now on two points. Number one, it appears that being vaccinated is protective, not 100% against long COVID, but the rates of long COVID being seen appear to be less in people who are vaccinated than people who are not. That's reassuring. The other point that's interesting, that's there's a growing body of data suggesting this, that it's possible to get experienced long COVID even from an asymptomatic COVID infection. So we see some patients now that were COVID positive, asymptomatic, had no symptoms, and then went on a month or two later to develop long COVID symptoms. So again, it's an area, as you and I have discussed, that relatively speaking, we know very little about why it happens, what's causing it, certainly the best treatment for it. We're learning a lot about it, but it's a concern, particularly with how many people were infected during this past Omicron surge.
Doc, there's a report out of Israel that, and I'm going to butcher these words, it's called PASC, post-acute sequelae, is that right?
Sequela.
I'm sorry. And it suggests that their results, that patients with this have significant impairment in fat B oxidation and increased blood lactate accumulation during exercise, regardless of previous comorbidities. It also reveals that it doesn't matter how fit you are as an individual, and I guess this is going right along with what you just talked about, being both symptomatic and asymptomatic and being susceptible to long-haul COVID. What does this actually mean with this fat B oxidation and increased blood lactate accumulation?
Essentially a metabolic impairment. I've not actually read that study, but it's a plausible theory. I mean, you know, each of your cells in your body are little mini power plants that take in fuel, oxygen, and other nutrients and put out energy for your body to use. And that accumulates, you know, all those cells combined to power whatever it is you want to do. But there's all types of impairments of that process. And if a cell can't extract the chemicals that it needs or perform that chemical reaction, then your body can't utilize the fuel it has to do things. And there are some diseases that cause this. When you're sick, sometimes it gets impaired. If that is the case, that people's metabolic pathways are somewhat impaired as a result of long COVID-like symptoms, that's concerning. I mean, I'll tell you what I've seen clinically and anecdotally is not overwhelming numbers, but some people, like you described, who are young, fit, athletic. You know, I've actually seen a couple endurance athletes who had COVID, had rather mild bouts of it, and started developing these type of symptoms a month or two out afterwards, and have decreased exercise tolerance. Despite feeling relatively okay, they describe a brain freeze and this baseline level of tiredness, and they can't exercise or compete endurance-wise the way that they were beforehand. And these are people who are very seasoned, and that's a concerning thing. The discussion about long COVID is getting complicated because the symptoms are so vague, and I think it's potentially easy to discount it in people because you can't see it. And you know, we've seen this type of stigmatization with other problems. There's, you know, all types of complex pain syndromes that people discount because they don't believe the person is really experiencing them. And some people are trying to paint long COVID in that bucket. But when you hear examples like you've described and like I've seen in people who are essentially athletes who have these symptoms, it's concerning. It's very difficult to ignore.
Yeah, obviously they say that, you know, their study has several limitations: cohort size, retrospective methodology, contemporaneous control. But they also say that, to their knowledge, their study provides the first evidence of mitochondrial dysfunction that advances the understanding of the pathogenesis of PACS in patients with preserved pulmonary and cardiac function. We've talked about this around it and touched on it a couple of times, you and I both wondered when we would get steps down the road as to finding out more about this long-haul COVID, because we're just seeing more and more folks that are afflicted with it.
Right. That's exactly right. And if this is true, again, it's really early, as you point out. But if it is true, it's a plausible mechanism to explain why this is happening to people. And that's not what we don't have anything like that right now. We have some speculation about inflammation and persistent inflammation and its effect on neurons, particularly in the brain. But this would be another plausible explanation for why some of these symptoms occur. If it ends up being true, I mean, that's, you know, first you have to identify the mechanism and then you can go about finding a way to treat it. So it would be an important first step if it gets validated in additional studies.
Yeah. You know, I have articulated this concern before, because obviously medical insurance companies are the last ones to kind of get on board with anything. But you have a lot of folks that are doling out a lot of money right now that are being rejected, you know, as it relates to their insurer, trying to figure out what's wrong with them. I mean, people, you know, I've seen these anecdotal stories where they think they're nuts. You know, it's just
Very, very frustrating position to be in as a patient, because you got to deal with your insurance agent who might not even recognize the syndrome. I mean, it's still relatively new. And you know, most insurance agents are a little bit slow to pick up new treatment modalities. And then you got to go find a clinic or a doctor that has expertise in long COVID, and it's few and far between right now. So it's an incredibly frustrating experience for a patient. And on top of that, you got people looking at you, probably thinking that you're making it up. And it's a tough place to be as a patient. I have a lot of sympathy for people that are experiencing these symptoms right now.
What are you seeing? You know, this is kind of a perfect segue into this topic. What are you seeing as the mental health byproduct of COVID? Has it revealed itself to you in the ER and in your practice?
It certainly has started to, but I don't think we've even fully described the extent to which mental health has suffered the past couple of years. We're beginning to do, and a couple of weeks ago, you and I talked about this data from the CDC on high schoolers, and 12% of high school women contemplated or attempted suicide the past year. That number is more than double in LGB high schoolers. And those numbers pan out across a number of different demographics of high schoolers. That's just one slice of it. But the trauma of the past couple of years, the uncertainty, the fear, the economic hardships, and the disease itself, I think that is the crisis right now, is how do we address the mental health challenges. And this was an area that we were challenged by before the pandemic. You know, for decades and decades and decades, there have not been parity of funding and attention towards mental health as compared to other medical diseases. We haven't funded mental health like we have other diseases. We have stigmatized mental health. We've even not done a good job at calling it a medical problem. You know, it's been highly stigmatized. We've gotten better over the years at that. I think now it's generally accepted that people that are suffering with mental health issues, and I include addiction in that, are medical patients, have medical problems, and deserve quality evidence-based medical treatment. But it took a long time to get there, and we still have a ways to go to fund mental health the same way that we fund diabetes and hypertension and cancer and everything else that inflicts us. And the COVID pandemic has really exacerbated that problem. There's a huge, huge need right now. Some good programs in the works, both on the state side and the federal side, but continued and more investment, I think, is going to be needed here.
And I think it's a legitimate concern, because as I think, you know, from a law enforcement perspective and what I've worked in, that, you know, we see how mental health reveals itself out on the streets of our communities day in and day out. And when you have an exacerbating factor or phenomenon like a pandemic, you really wonder, you know. And in the 40 years of law enforcement, I've not experienced a pandemic, so I'm kind of curious if we are going down a path where we have the possibility of this mental health explosion, as it relate, you know, figuratively speaking, of a problem that we're not really prepared to deal with.
Yeah, I have the same concerns. The causes of why it's exacerbated over the past couple of years are multifactorial. I think they're complex. There's been interruptions in treatments for a lot of people, and then the stressors have been greatly exacerbated. But you know, I think you point out, you know, this is not just a healthcare thing, because particularly with mental health, it bleeds over into law enforcement, it bleeds over into education. It adds additional expenses to society that we haven't anticipated. I mean, the old saying in New Orleans that the largest mental health provider in the city, Lean's Parish Jail, I mean, that's it's not far from the truth. And that's not the best way to be dealing with this challenge, both for the people who are inflicted by it and for the rest of society that has to pay for it. There's much better ways to do it, much more humane ways to do it. And again, this is not something that started with COVID, but it's something that we've been not addressing to the caliber we should have for decades, I think. We realized that with the opioid addiction crisis, and we realized we were behind the eight ball in accepting addiction as a medical disease and treating it as a disease and not, you know, a character flaw or a shortcoming, that needs to be extended across the mental health spectrum, and then we got to fund it appropriately. But I think you're right. This is a much bigger problem than we even can describe right now. And coming out of the pandemic, and again, I think we're in this process of coming out of it now, you know, getting our educational system back where it needs to be and getting our mental and behavioral health system where it needs to be, I think are going to be the two biggest challenges ahead of us.
You know, I often think about adolescent mental health care, right? All of the trials and tribulations that we moved our kids through, where, you know, the normal patterns of human life have been altered. It's one thing for, I think, an adult to deal with, and although we say our kids are more resilient than adults are in most cases, but I kind of wonder sometimes in, relative to COVID if that would hold true.
Yeah, I think COVID, no question, made it worse. In disruption in school made it worse. The stressors at home, a lot of families had to deal with economic hardship and job interruptions. I mean, that makes it worse. You know, I'll say the stat again because it hit me in the gut when I read it the first time. 12% of high school seniors last year contemplated or attempted suicide. That's a crazy number. I mean, that's astronomical. And we cannot ignore a statistic like that.
Yeah, especially those that took an overt act towards it. If you just look at that data and forget about the contemplation and just look at the overt act, those numbers are off the charts.
Off the charts. And, you know, school is an important mediator in this. But schools can't do it all. Schools have a lot of things that they got to deal with. So it really is going to take, I think, much larger investment to help support particularly young people. And, you know, we deal with social media now in a way that we didn't 10 years ago that has shown to be an exacerbator for a lot of individuals, an echo chamber. It can accelerate the development of mental health challenges. We've got problems now that we didn't have, a decade ago. We've got to be doing a better job at addressing them.
No doubt. Got to get to a break. We'll be right back with Dr. Joe Cantor, State Health Officer for the state of Louisiana. Stay with us, folks.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
We are back, folks. We're visiting with Dr. Joe Cantor, State Health Officer for the state of Louisiana. Doc, I don't think we've talked about this, but it was reported a couple of weeks ago. The FDA authorized the first COVID-19 breath test, the InspectIR COVID-19 breathalyzer, can be used in medical offices and mobile testing sites, it says, and it can has accurately identified more than 91% of positive samples and nearly 100% of negative samples in its initial testing.
They did. I was excited by this. I've actually been anxious to see this device myself. I've not been able to see it yet. The performance metrics that I reviewed, I mean, it's not as accurate as a PCR, as a formal PCR, but it's on par, perhaps even a little bit better than the typical antigen test, the Binex Now, or the at-home rapid test, which is good. That's a good thing to have. It's a large device. I mean, it's the size of a large computer. So it really is intended for an office space. You put it in a doctor's office or some other setting like that. It's not a handheld device that you could take home and do it like that. So I think it limits the locations where it would be useful. But I think it's a great advancement. People have been swabbed a lot over the past couple of years.
Yes.
And, a lot of people would rather not. So I'm excited by it. I'm looking forward to kind of seeing it myself. It'd be nice to have something a little more handheld or portable, but this will help. I think if you go to the doctor or the hospital and they're able to utilize this, that's nice, I think.
Yeah. Doc, last question. We only have a few minutes left. I know the state of Louisiana, like the 49 other states, have received a lot of money for COVID prevention and infrastructure. Do you know whether or not we have an approach here in this state relative to better ventilation systems in our public school facilities throughout the state?
There is an approach. I don't think it's entirely sufficient. At least not for the opportunity. And the opportunity here is through the COVID pandemic, we have learned a ton about how respiratory viruses spread in indoor environments and what can be done to mitigate that, whether it's improved ventilation by bringing in outside air and circulating it more effectively, or filtration, adding like HEPA filtration filters to an HVAC system the same way that airplanes do, and it can be very effective. Or disinfection, there's ultraviolet light disinfection. So there's all these treatment modalities that we've really dug into in ways we haven't before. And the benefit is just not COVID. I mean, influenza, seasonal flu, it immediately comes to mind. While it's not a pandemic, it doesn't disrupt our lives, we have, a decent amount of morbidity mortality every year from just the flu. If we can prevent that through non-drastic measures by improving indoor air environments, we should be seeing if that's possible. So I'm particularly interested in how we can do this. There is money on the table. I think one of the challenges is a lot of the funding programs, and there's a couple grant programs out from the feds right now that we help administer, they require a match. So if there is, for example, a school building that was due and planning for renovations to their physical facility, they could put up the match, get the money, and it would be a good investment and it would work out. I think the bigger challenge is a lot of our schools are really strapped for cash, and if they weren't planning on doing renovations anyway, it's hard to put up the match to do that right now. This particular issue is not going to go away. I think it's going to only increase because it really does provide the opportunity to have safer indoor environments.
No doubt. Doc, we have run out of time again. That hour flew by. Thank you so much for joining us. Hope you get out to Jazz Fest. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Noel. You too. And please, if you all go out there this weekend, it's going to be awfully hot, so bring some water and be safe out there.
Hydrate and suntan lotion. Got it.
There you go.
All righty, folks. Dr. Joe Cantor, state health officer for the state of Louisiana. We'll be right back. Stay with us. When we come back, folks, after the top of the news break, we'll visit with Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis from Defense Priorities. He's a senior fellow there, and we'll get the latest update on the Russian-Ukrainian war. So stay with us. We will be right back after the break. This is Newell on WWL.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.